You're listening to Agent Driven Development, real experiences from operators building with AI. Everything here is free. Use it. Share it. Just attribute it back.
I wrote an entire novel about a CEO who tried to fix his monolith three times. $47 million across three failed initiatives before he changed the approach. That was fiction. What I'm about to tell you is not. It's a Tuesday morning and your CTO just walked out of a board meeting where the legacy system came up again. It always comes up. The system that runs 40% of revenue, the system nobody wants to touch, the system that hasn't had a confident deploy since the last two engineers who understood its internals left for companies that let them build things instead of babysit things. The board wants to know why the company can't move faster. The CTO knows the answer. The monolith. It's always the monolith. And now someone, a vendor, a consultancy, a partner, a very polished person with a very polished deck, has walked into the room and said the words the CTO's been waiting to hear. Fix it. We have AI agents now. This time is different. The CTO wants to believe him. The CTO needs to believe him because this is the third time. Point O's. Let me walk you through the first two times because you've lived them, even if the names are different. 2019, maybe 2018 at your company. The initiative had a name. It always has a name. Phoenix, Horizon, Evolve, something aspirational that looked good on the program charter in the quarterly business review. The plan was a full rewrite. Microservices. The architecture team spent 4 months designing the target state. Beautiful diagramist, clean domain boundaries. Event-driven everything. The kind of architecture that makes senior engineers nod approvingly in review meetings and makes absolutely no contact with the reality of a 15-year-old code base that has 900 database tables and business logic buried in stored procedures that nobody has read since the developer who wrote them retired to teach high school math. They staffed it with 20 engineers. Good engineers. Gave it a budget, call it $4 million over 2 years. Executive sponsorship. Stood it up in Jira with epics and milestones and a Gantt chart that showed migration completing in Q3 of the following year. By month six, they'd rewritten two services. The original system had 47. The two services they rewrote handled 12% of the traffic and required a synchronization layer back to the monolith that was more complex than the original code. The Gantt chart had been revised twice. The burn rate was ahead of plan. The team was tired. By month 14, the initiative was quietly deprioritized. Not canceled. Nobody cancels these things. They just stopped getting mentioned in the QBR. The 20 engineers got reassigned to revenue-generating work. The two rewritten services stayed in production, running alongside the monolith, maintained by one person who wished they hadn't volunteered. 1. It always wins the first time. Because the first time, the company learns that rewriting a legacy system isn't an engineering problem, it's a physics problem, and nobody accounted for the physics. The second time was smarter. It's always smarter the second time. The scars from the first attempt made the leadership team cautious, specific, and more realistic about scope. This time they didn't try to rewrite, they tried to strangle. Someone had read Martin Fowler's Strangler Fig Pattern, or at least the blog post summary of it, and the approach made sense. Don't replace the monolith all at once, wrap it. Intercept requests at the edge, route new functionality to new services. Let the old system slowly lose surface area until it can be decommissioned. The plan was sound, the theory was right, the execution hit the same wall it always hits. The Strangler Fig requires you to identify scenes. The places where you can cleanly intercept a request, redirect it to a new service, and guarantee that the behavior is identical. In a well-structured code base, seams are findable. In a 15-year-old monolith with 900 tables and business logic and stored procedures, the seams aren't where the architecture diagrams say they are. They're buried. They're tangled. They're defended by side effects that nobody documented because nobody documented because nobody documented because nobody knew they were side effects at the time. The team spent 3 months mapping the first extraction boundary. They thought it would take 3 weeks. When they finally cut the seam and routed traffic to the new service, two downstream systems broke in ways nobody predicted because the monolith was doing six things that looked like one thing from the outside. The second attempt lasted 18 months. It extracted four modules. The monolith still ran 36. The cost was north of $3 million. Organizational trust in modernization dropped to zero. The CTO who sponsored it left 9 months later, not because of the project specifically, but the project didn't help. Boy knows. 1.0s. This is where your company is right now, standing at the edge of the third attempt. And this time, the pitch is different. This time, there's new technology in the room. AI agents that can read a million lines of code, map dependency graphs, write characterization tests, identify extraction boundaries, generate scaffolding. The tooling is real. It's powerful. It does change the economics of legacy rescue in ways that would have been absurd 3 years ago. But the monolith is still the monolith. The organizational gravity is still the organizational gravity. The physics that killed the first two attempts haven't been repealed because someone shipped better tooling. The agents are an accelerant, they're not a strategy. And the difference between the third time working and the third time being the most expensive failure yet comes down to one thing. Who is leading it? The person you need doesn't work at a big consultancy. They don't work at a tool vendor. They're not on a bench somewhere waiting to be staffed onto your account. The large firms have two kinds of people, and neither is what you need. They have people who led legacy rescues before AI agents existed. These people understand the patterns. They know Michael Feathers. They know the strangler fig. They've written characterization tests against undocumented systems and lived with the consequences of getting the seams wrong. But they did all that work by hand, with human teams at human speed. They haven't integrated agents into the discipline because the discipline predates the tooling. And they have people who are expert in AI agents. They can configure them, chain them, orchestrate multi-step code generation workflows. They demo beautifully, but they've never stood in front of a 15-year-old monolith with 900 tables and felt the weight of it. They've never had to decide at week 6 that the extraction plan is wrong and the whole approach needs to change. They've never made the call that costs a month of rework but saves the project. You need the person who lives in both worlds, legacy rescue practitioner and AI native builder. That person is rare because legacy rescue is a specialized discipline practiced by a small number of people, and AI native development is new. The overlap is tiny. Tiny. The people in that overlap tend to work at small firms or on their own. They don't have a slide deck. They don't have a logo you recognize. They have a track record and opinions about seam identification that they'll share with you over coffee because they care about the problem more than the pitch. Right now. And they should, because what they can do, lead a legacy rescue with AI agents in months instead of years, at a fraction of the historical cost, nobody at the big consultancies or your tool vendor's professional services arm can do yet. Point O's. So how do you tell? How do you know whether the person sitting across from you can actually lead this work? 90 seconds. Say Feathers. If they say Michael, as in Michael Feathers, who wrote, Working Effectively with Legacy Code, you're in a real conversation. That book defined characterization testing and seam identification for an entire generation of engineers. If the person who's about to lead your third attempt doesn't know who Michael Feathers is, they haven't done this work before. Walk them out politely. You can't afford a fourth time. Say Martin. If they say Fowler, as in Martin Fowler, who gave us the refactoring catalog and the strangler fig pattern your second attempt was built on, that's a second good signal. But push further. Ask them when the strangler fig fails. Ask them what they do instead. Because the strangler fig does fail. It fails when the seams are too tangled to intercept cleanly, when the side effects cross too many boundaries, when the cost of maintaining the proxy exceeds the cost of the thing it's replacing. A practitioner knows this. A presenter knows this. A practitioner knows this. A presenter doesn't. Say, cyclomatic complexity. Complexity. Watch their face. If there's a pause. If they redirect to code quality metrics in the abstract. If they reach for a tool name instead of an explanation, you have your answer. Cyclomatic complexity is how a legacy rescue practitioner decides where to cut. It's how they tell the difference between a module that's too tangled to extract and one that's clean enough to start with. If they can't explain it the way a chef explains knife technique, from muscle memory, without thinking about it, they're not a practitioner. Three names, 90 seconds. It has never been wrong. Now let me tell you why the third time will fail the same way, unless you change the physics. Your company is about to make the same structural mistake for the third time. Better tooling won't save you from it. The pitch you're going to hear will sound so reasonable that your steering committee will approve it unanimously. We'll embed with your teammates. We'll refactor the monolith within the constraints of your existing organization. We'll coach your engineers along the way so that when we leave, your people own the new architecture and have the skills to maintain it. It worked. Not the first time. Not the second time. Not with AI agents. The combination of refactoring a legacy system inside the organization that produced it while simultaneously upskilling the teams that maintain it doesn't produce the outcome you're paying for. The reason is organizational gravity. Gravity. Your organization is a gravitational field. Your sprint cadence, your planning rituals, your approval chains, your deployment process, your incentive structures, all that pulls every modernization effort back toward the center of mass. The center of mass is the monolith. It's always the monolith. Your engineers will default to the patterns the organization rewards. Not because they can't learn new ones, because the system penalizes deviation. The engineer who follows the existing process gets a clean review. The engineer who tries the new extraction pattern has to explain it to three people, get an exception approved, and defend it in a retro when something breaks. Your planning process will chop the extraction into two-week sprints because that's the only shape your system knows. Legacy extraction doesn't fit that shape. The seams are where the seams are, not where your Jira board wants them. Physics, not willpower, not talent, not budget. The third time works only in isolation. The person who can actually lead this work will tell you something your organization doesn't want to hear. The work has to happen outside your existing structure. Not in secret, not without your people involved, but structurally isolated from the gravitational field that killed the first two attempts. A small team, three people, maybe four, Working with AI agents the way a surgeon works with instruments, the practitioner makes the judgment calls, the tooling executes them faster. They write characterization tests against undocumented modules at a pace that would have taken a human team months. They map dependency graphs across the full code base in hours instead of quarters. They find the real seams, not the ones on the architecture diagram from 2019, and they make extraction calls based on what the code actually does, not what someone thought it did. Module by module, seam by seam, with the kind of judgment that only comes from having done this before and having been wrong before and knowing the difference between a clean cut and a cut that bleeds for 6 months. And then, only then, they bring your teams in, not to learn while the house is being rebuilt, to move into a house that's standing. Your engineers learn the new patterns by working in a code base built with those patterns. They own the new system because the new system was built to be owned. The transfer happens on a timeline that makes sense, into an architecture that's ready to receive them. In isolation. Transfer ownership second. That's the only sequence that has ever worked. Here's what it looks like when it actually works. The practitioner reads the code base, not skims it, reads it. Agents map every dependency, every call chain, every stored procedure, every table relationship. The practitioner looks at that map and starts making decisions no agent can make. Which modules are load-bearing, which ones are deadweight dressed up as critical, which seams are real, and which ones are traps. Extraction is in production, not a prototype, a real module, cleanly separated, running alongside the monolith with a strangler proxy routing traffic. Hundreds of characterization tests generated by agents, validated by the practitioner, guarantee behavioral equivalence. The monolith doesn't know the module left. The customers don't know, nothing broke. The customers don't know, nothing broke. The customers don't know, nothing broke. That's the point. Week 8, 3 more modules out. The team has a rhythm. Agents are writing characterization tests faster than the practitioner can review them, which means the practitioner's job has shifted from writing tests to making architectural decisions. Judgment, not labor. That's the correct allocation of a human being in 2026. Week 16. The monolith has lost 40% of its surface area. Your engineers are starting to work in the extracted modules. They're learning the new patterns not from a training deck, but from production code. Week 24. The monolith is either gone or small enough that maintaining it is a manageable cost rather than an existential risk. Your engineers own the new system. The practitioner writes a transition document, shakes hands, and moves to the next company standing at the edge of their third attempt. A fraction of what the first two attempts burned. Total time, months, not years. Organizational disruption, close to nothing because the work happened in isolation and the transfer happened deliberately. The people who can do this work are a small population. Very small. And every CTO with a 15-year-old monolith is about to start looking for them at the same time. Because the board meeting where the monolith comes up again is happening everywhere, not just at your company. These practitioners can name their price. What they offer. A completed legacy rescue in months, led by someone who has done it before, accelerated by tooling that didn't exist 2 years ago. You can't buy that from your existing vendors. You can't buy it from the large consultancies. You can't buy it from the tool companies. You can buy it from a small number of people who happen to have spent their careers in exactly the right discipline at exactly the right discipline at exactly the right moment. The window is open now. It won't stay open. Find them before your competitors do. Test them. Feathers. Martin. Cyclomatic complexity. 90 seconds. And when you find the right one, don't make the mistake your company made the first two times. Don't embed them in your org chart. Don't ask them to coach while they cut. Don't subject them to your sprint planning and your architecture review board and the gravitational field that killed the last two initiatives. Give them isolation. Give them authority. Give them a small team and the tooling and the room to work at the speed the problem demands. The monolith doesn't have to win this time, but it will if you hire the same way you hired last time. This is Norman from Agent Driven Development.
That's it for this one. More at agentdrivendevelopment.com. If it helped, pass it on.